Subscribe to the Hit That Line Podcast Network, brought to you by Breeden RV Center. Breeden RV Center, family-owned and operated, a no-pressure, laid-back atmosphere, and always home of the free maintenance for life.
No matter what the stats may say, and the experts may think, and the commentators may have predicted, when the race is on, all bets are off. Don't be surprised if somebody decides to flip the script and take a pass on yelling uncle. And then suddenly, as the old saying goes, we got ourselves a game.
This is Trusting the Process.
We have made it to Season 1, Episode 7 of Trusting the Process. I'd like to welcome in Nikki Chavanel. She covers Arkansas and recruiting for Hogbeat and Rivals. Now, Nikki, you were a little disappointed with my picture selection. What I do before every one of these shows is I post four pictures on Twitter at Tie Sports Radio of just the guest personality picks. Now, I posted young picks, posted old picks. I don't know. Did you take offense to the Superwoman, Superman pick? I didn't post any selfie picks, so I feel like I did my part.
Well, I just knew that you had to, first of all, to find those pictures, you definitely had to go to my Facebook. And so I'm just imagining the other photos that you must have seen whilst doing that. And it's horrifying to me. But no, those were okay. I mean, the Dez Bryant signal.
The X.
I mean, the X. That was fun, I guess. I wasn't like a huge Cowboys fan, but whenever you work for a team, you kind of, I guess, you get into it. The Superwoman costume, that was actually a really good one. I'm not sure where it went. I wish I'd kept it.
I love Superman growing up, so I can relate to that. On the note of pictures, what's the most embarrassing photo that you've ever taken?
Oh my goodness. It's probably still up there because, you know, I'm big on like not deleting memories, even though they're terrible.
I purged my Facebook a while ago.
Yeah, no, it's probably some like photo shoot style pics that I took with like my girlfriends in like seventh grade, and we just all are hideous, but we had so much fun. So I don't want to delete those.
So you mentioned Facebook. One of the other things outside of talking to a few people that you know that I did was go to your LinkedIn profile. And it was weird when I talked to Phil about this, hearing him called Philip by his mom and dad. And for whatever reason, I didn't put two and two together with you as well. When's the last time that someone has called you Nicole? Is that just a parents thing, Nikki?
Oh, my parents don't even call me Nicole.
Oh, wow.
Only people who find out that my name isn't actually Nikki and like want to, you know, make fun of me use it. Or people who think that it's like, you know, cool. But no, my mom, in Russian, it's very common to add like an E sound at the end of your name to make it like a Nikki, like a nickname. And so Nicole and Nikki are just so close together that she just called me that since birth, really. Nikichka is what she would call me, and so I wanted to change it permanently, but it never happened.
Nikki, bring up the Russian part. Phil and I had a conversation last night, and I told him, hey, Nikki's coming on the show tomorrow. Got anything I should ask? And I want to go back to our days on Halftime. Is your mom Russian? Is she born in Paris? Like, I remember you telling us this story, but just kind of fill in the blanks for what I'm forgetting.
So, I don't know a ton of my family. It's pretty small, but my mother, she was born in Kiev, Ukraine, but my family's mostly Russian, and so she grew up in Moscow, and my grandfather, who now lives in Houston, he was an ambassador in the former Soviet Union. So they grew up in many different countries, including in Africa and Nigeria. But my mom moved from Russia right before I was born in Houston. So, yeah, I've been back there a few times, and it's cool. But my mom has done so much to try to just, like, you know, embrace American culture, like football and stuff. And so sometimes it doesn't feel like I'm Russian, but then, you know, I hear her on the phone, and it's a quick reminder that, you know, we're multilingual.
When you went back to Russia, did you go to Moscow? Did you see the Kremlin? What all did you explore in your time there?
Yeah, we did see, you know, the classic onion domes, and we went to St. Petersburg. But when we're in Moscow, it's, you know, seeing a lot of my my mom's friends. She has some best girlfriends that she still visits with, and my godparents are there. So it's a lot of just, like, seeing acquaintances instead of actual, like, big sites and stuff.
Now, you brought up Houston, Nikki. Is that where you spent the majority of your childhood in college? Or, excuse me, not college, but high school?
Yeah, so I grew up all over Houston. We moved around a lot, so I had lived in Pearland, in Katy, when it both of the time they were the developing parts, and now they're, like, booming. But I lived in the Heights, and I went to Audi International. It's a private school in the middle of Houston, so a lot of times it was a big commute for us, but yeah, we didn't even have football at Audi, so I think that was something I definitely wanted when I was looking into colleges.
I did a little research on your high school. Tell us more about it. What was your high school experience like, Nikki?
Yeah, so it's an international high school, and it's partnered with the French baccalaureate. So half of my class are, like, French and French-speaking, like, expatriates whose parents are here for, like, work. You know, Houston has a big oil and gas industry, obviously, so there's a lot of, like, Schlumberger employees and all kinds of different expats. And so a lot of them send their kids to this one school, and my mom, being Russian, she just liked the idea of me going to a school with people from all over the world, and I really loved it. It was great, but again, didn't have football, but we were a big soccer school, and we had one of the best, you know, private teams, I guess, out there. I don't know how we do against public competition, but we did pretty well, and it was a great experience. We took a second, some people took third languages for different classes, and we had the IB program, which gave me a lot of credit when I got to SMU.
Are you fluent in any other language like French?
You know, I was really good at French. Once I got to SMU, though, I decided I didn't want to minor in it, and I dropped it. And at this point, it is not that good. Russian, I understand a lot of it, but I always feel uncomfortable trying, like, struggling through Russian when I'm around native speakers. I don't like to embarrass myself like that.
Well, if you're ever angry at a fellow media member, you can just curse at them in Russian, Nikki, and they won't know what you're saying if you're around them in the press box. And that's, I feel like, a way that you can get away with it.
I just go with an eye roll most of the time.
Nothing wrong with that. See, you mentioned your high school not having football, but you did have soccer. Now, you played soccer in high school, right?
Oh, yeah. I was a four-year starter at defensive back. I was pretty quick. That was really my main skill. You just kind of hang out back there and pick people off, you know?
Were you scrappy? Were you the mean girl that was always fouling?
I would foul when I needed to foul, but I was a pretty smart player, I think.
Did you ever think that you were going to play collegiately when you were in high school?
My junior year, so I started playing soccer, like, late compared to a lot of the people that I played, like, club soccer with.
Okay.
They had always imagined playing in college, and I didn't really think it was a possibility until much too late, like a lot of these football players that I see nowadays. So I sent out, like, a bunch of emails to colleges, but the only responses I got were, like, D2 schools, and at that point I was like, you know, I'm just going to focus on getting my degree. And I did try to walk on at SMU, but I had a couple practices, and then they cut me loose.
Let's hear that story, because I didn't know about that. I don't know how many people knew about that. I mean, that's a Division One school, even to be a walk-on. What were those practices like from a conditioning standpoint? And did you just decide to bow out, or did they decide that it was best that you not continue?
So what I had done, I emailed them when I first got there, but I didn't get a walk-on tryout until the spring, and I had already, like, I don't think they were really looking for a walk-on, so they weren't being particularly helpful, and I was, like, trying to figure out when their practices were so I wouldn't schedule a class, just in case I made the team, but I ended up having a class right when their practices were, but I was like, okay, I'm going to email my teacher and tell them, you know, this is a big deal. If I make the team, I'm probably going to drop your class, but I need to go and be at this practice. So I go and I do the practice, which was fine. I could tell that, like, technically I was a little rusty. I had practiced with my old high school boys varsity team during their winter conditioning to get, like, my feet back. And I felt like I was in a good place, but I could tell, you know, they had some technical advantages on me. And then after, I remember, they asked me to stay for the conditioning portion. And I was like, okay, at least they're asking me to stay. That's good. But, oh, my God, the next day, I could not move. It was so bad. I went back the next week at the same time, and I, you know, had my legs back and everything. But I think it was after that practice that they were like, you know, we're good. We're good on walk-ons. They didn't have any that I knew of at the time, so I didn't feel bad like some other girls made and I didn't. But at one point during my collegiate career, they did need to steal one of our club players to go walk on as their goalie, because like they had three goalies get injured.
Okay. Did you play club? You obviously didn't do the team side. Did you play club at all, Nikki?
I did. Yeah, it was pretty fun. It was competitive. We played versus like UT, Arlington, and schools like that nearby.
Do you still play golf today, or is that something that it's just been a while since then?
Golf, no. I'm no good at that.
Hey, I'm right there with you.
I dabbled. No, I don't get into that. When the media had like the golf scramble with the coaches, I was like, Hutch, I'm going to need you to take one and you stay. I'm going to go.
Oh, man. We're talking with Nikki Chavanel. She covers Arkansas and recruiting for Hogby and Rivals. It's season one, episode 7 of Trusting the Process. Nikki, you brought up that your high school didn't have football, but somehow, some way, you became a Patriots fan. Now, I would think as a Houston resident, you'd be an Astro, Texans, Rockets. Was this just a Tom Brady thing? Why did you become a New England Patriots fan?
So my mom moved to the U.S. with my you know, biological father, and they got divorced. And then my stepdad came into the picture, and they got married when I was 5. And he is from Massachusetts, he's from New Hampshire, from Manchester, and, you know, New England. So he was a big New England fan, the Celtics and the Red Sox, of course, and he had all the memorabilia and stuff, which he, of course, gave to my older brother, but that is...
Oh, that SOB, come on, man.
That is neither here nor there, but we spent, you know, so many Sundays and weekday nights watching, you know, the Red Sox or the Patriots and stuff, so... Naturally, I became a Patriots fan, and they were so good, you know, early on in my life that even as I, you know, became a bigger Texans fan, it's just like, why would I ever stop rooting against that? I feel like that's, you know, it's in my roots now.
Does Deshaun Watson stay in Houston, or do you think he ends up at another franchise?
Well, you know, I never think it's a good idea to keep someone around who doesn't want to be there. So it sounds like he really wants to go, and they should probably make that happen.
You brought up your older brother. Is he your only sibling? What's his name, and what was y'all's relationship like growing up?
Okay, so my stepdad, I mentioned, he had two kids from a previous marriage. So that's Patrick, my older brother, and Jess, my older sister.
Okay.
And they grew up in Manchester. So they would come see us in the summer and stuff, but we weren't super close. My brother was always roughhousing and wearing a Red Sox hat and stuff like that. But my older sister, Olga, who is my mom's, daughter, so my biological sister, she is like the complete opposite from me. Like on Sunday, she was not with us on the couch watching football. She got into volleyball in high school, but that was about it.
Are you close with your stepbrother and stepsister now, or is that just kind of not really a thing?
We're not that close. I just think because we didn't spend that much time with them as we grew older, we've never lived in the same place. It's just never been like that close of a family thing. But I think that's why me and my dad got so close, because, you know, he used to spend all that time with Patrick, and then I just kind of, became his football buddy.
Blended families are tough. I'm a part of one. Mom passed away when I was younger, and dad got remarried to my stepmom, who I love now. That was a difficult time for me. Was that, and I don't know when your mom or your parents got remarried, was that a difficult time for you, Nikki? I don't know what age you were. I just know that's not easy, regardless of your age.
It wasn't weird growing up, because my dad, he just filled right in. It was like super natural. My real father, I guess he moved to, I believe, Seattle. So he was out of the picture early. So I wasn't like confused having like two separate families. It felt very normal to me. It was later in life that I did try to get in touch with my real dad, and it just like wasn't, I don't know. I could tell he didn't really have any interest. And so that was weird for me. But I have no complaints about how I grew up. My parents always, made it feel very normal.
He's missing a hell of a daughter, man. I'm sorry about
that's okay.
Nikki, I want to talk about your time at SMU. So I mentioned my dad getting remarried. My stepmom actually went there. Why did you end up, and I know it's close to home, but tell me, why did you end up at SMU, and were there any other schools that piqued your interest when you were going through colleges looking around?
Yeah, so I visited SMU early on in my like college search, because I had a club soccer tournament up in Dallas, and my mom, just conveniently scheduled a tour for us while we were there. I didn't really want to go, but I thought it was really nice. But I always thought I would end up going to a bigger school like Texas. Texas has a very strict policy on admittance for in-staters. You have to be like top 8% of your class or something. I don't know what it is nowadays, but at my private school, where we're a class of, 100, I was not one of the top 8 in my class.
Neither was I. I think I graduated with 118. I would have not been top 8% either, so don't feel bad.
No, and it was so frustrating, because like the people who did get in also got into like, Yale and all these other schools, so they weren't even going to go. But regardless, I also applied to USC, Miami. I was looking at journalism, but my main focus wasn't all about like journalism. Like I wasn't going to go to Missouri because it was too cold, even though they have a really good journalism program, or like Northwestern or something like that. I was mostly focused on staying closer to home or going somewhere like nice and hot and good weather. But I ended up at SMU because they gave me some good scholarship money.
That's what it comes down to sometimes, right?
Although now looking at it, like compared to like if I had gone to Texas A&M, it was still a ridiculous amount of money. I still have student loans. I'm not ashamed of that, but I'm almost done.
You mentioned still having student loans. when I got to Arkansas initially, I was thinking to myself, I kind of regret going to in-state. Lived here my entire life. After 4 years, don't really have a lot of regrets. Love the University of Arkansas. Love my diploma being from there. Nikki, outside of those student loans that you're still paying off, and you're not the only one, do you have any regrets staying in-state for college?
Not really. It was convenient at the time. And looking back on it, being in Dallas or just a major city was actually really great because having all the pro teams in the state or in the city, like I was able to work for almost every single one of them at some point while I was at SMU. So without that experience, like my resume doesn't look as good and, you know, you don't get the opportunities that you get. So I think overall, like I just love SMU. I don't think the environment is that great, especially the environment at SMU at the time that I was there was not perhaps as good as it is now. And it's still obviously not even close to the big state schools in terms of football and students actually caring about it. So from that perspective, and it was a bit of a opposite direction from what I was used to from high school, where everyone around me was from a different place versus at SMU. It is kind of a specific group of people.
It's cliquish. I mean, I'm just going to go out
a little bit.
Screw them. This is your time. Now go out there and take it.
You're listening to Trusting the Process.
One of the people that you met, I found this fascinating as I'm doing my research. I am elementary friends, Nikki, with a guy named Julio Alea, who's now a practicing lawyer in Little Rock. Do you still keep in touch with Julio? What do you remember about my elementary buddy?
Was he a tennis player?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I was friends with him briefly just from our friends of SMU. I got to know a few of the tennis players that like lived in my dorm. That's fun.
That's awesome.
I'm not like good friends with him, but that's cool.
I reached out to him yesterday and I was like, hey man, do you know? And he said, yeah, like he didn't act like he knew you well, but he had mentioned y'all were friends. I figure I'd throw that little tidbit there. Small world, right?
That's fun. Yeah.
So you mentioned the jobs that you worked getting to go to school in Texas. And I'm fortunate enough today to have this job because I worked at so many different positions when I was in school in Fayetteville. I really enjoyed your website, Nikki, because your website is very similar to what I did, resume, portfolio, your work. How did your website help you get jobs back in the day? And I guess, I don't know if it got you the Arkansas Rivals job.
Well, the website was something, you know, that they tell you to put together when you're looking for jobs in college. I'm not sure many people actually referenced it when I was looking for jobs, but maybe they did. None of them mentioned it. But I think just my resume in general and all the things that I had on there, like people always thought I was older than I was in college because of the things that I had already done on my resume.
That helps. And some of those include, we'll start with this. You got to intern with John McClain. And for those who don't know who that is the beat writer for the Houston Texans and one of the biggest names, not just in the Houston area, but across the NFL when it comes to his knowledge. What was that experience like, Nikki?
Man, I was so lucky to have McClain introduced into my life. So Tony Peterson is the head of the SMU journalism department, and he went to Baylor, where he was roommates with John McClain. And so when I got to know Tony at SMU and he knew I was from Houston, I asked him if he could put me in touch with McClain to potentially work with him over the summer. I knew obviously that he would be at Texas training camp. It was the summer that Hard Knocks was there. And the first conversation that I had with John, I mean, it was something that probably completely changed what I wanted to do in my career, because he told me he first asked me, like, what I wanted to do in the business, and I told him I wanted to be a sideline reporter, and that I think that is something that a lot of women now, like, it is obviously a good way to get in the business, but I do think that a lot of women early in their career think it's, like, the only thing you can do.
Yeah.
I think that he told me that I should go into the business thinking about reporting and writing first. And he thought that going out and telling people that, it automatically broadens what people think about you and your knowledge of the game, and it doesn't put you in a box. And that really opened my eyes, because once I got to SMU and I was working in broadcast and doing the sports shows and stuff, I realized I didn't think I was very good at it. So I'm glad I got that advice early.
You worked in front of the camera, behind the camera. You just mentioned you didn't think you were very good at it. Do you have any desire to get back on TV again? Or are you happy with what you're doing now in terms of just writing and reporting?
So, you know how, like, ESPN, they have, like, beat reporters on certain teams who also do, like, hits on TV? Like,
yeah,
I would totally
Fowler, Dombrowski, like, all those guys, NFL Nation people.
I would totally do that. I would never be interested in, like, a show or being, like a main, you know, anchor or anything like that. That's too much. I want to be known as, like, an expert on something so that people will want to call me up, you know?
Okay.
Like we do for radio.
Okay. Another guy you got to work for, and I listen to this guy when I'm in Dallas, when I'm in town, Tim Kalishaw, and that name is probably resonates with a lot of our listeners around the horn. Nikki, is he a tool or is he cool to work for like McClain?
He was really cool.
Okay.
while I worked for them, I read his book, which was really, really interesting. If people don't know, he battled, you know, with sobriety. And it was just interesting to read about how the business was so different. And maybe it's not for some people, but it is for me. The reporter used to go out and drink a ton with, like, sources and stuff. And so that really, like, drove his drinking. And it was very interesting. But him and Matt Mosley, those two were a lot of fun. And I, like, before that, I didn't know how people were able to fill, you know, 3 hours and 4 hours worth of show, and, like, seeing how they put those shows together were, it was really, you know, eye-opening into the business. I never really wanted to work in radio that much after that, but it was a good experience.
And that was going to be my next question, but you just answered it. You do like doing the hits here and there. I know you guys do the Hogbeat Hour here on ESPN Arkansas, 7 o'clock on Thursday night, when you can hear tomorrow. Nikki and Hutch do a fantastic job with that. Nikki, another area you got to work in, you were a contract writer for DallasCowboys.com. Was that an enjoyable experience?
Yeah, it was a little scary. I had worked in the event production department, helping with, you know, game days and stuff. And so when my internship ended, my, you know, like, my boss hooked me up and you know, told me who to talk to try to, you know, write for them that summer during, you know, draft season and stuff. And so, you know, Nick Eatman over at Dallas Cowboys, he actually thinks he's a Razorback fan. He likes some of my tweets these days.
Good man.
Just, like, gave me an opportunity, which was like, yeah, show up, transcribe stuff, pitch ideas. And that was, like, a lot of pressure. I didn't feel like my ideas were, like, that great at the time. But now that, you know, I have experience on a beat, you kind of get a sense of what they're looking for. But it was just, like, a great look at how, you know, the NFL is covered on a day-to-day.
Did you ever get to meet Daddy Jerry, Mr. Jerry Jones?
Yeah, I'm not sure if, like, I asked him anything directly, but I was in the scrum with him on a couple occasions.
Let's talk about what you did with the Active Network. Now, did you used to be a marathon runner? You mentioned being a four-year starter in high school for soccer. Did you do marathons and a lot of running back in the day? And is that something you still do, Nikki?
So when I graduated from SMU, I did it in 3 years. So I was a little ahead of schedule. I didn't really know what I wanted to do right when I got out, but I was
Can we stop right there? You graduated college in 3 years. Why would you do that to yourself? I'm not saying you got to take the neighbor's 7.5 year route, but why would you do that to yourself?
Well, like I said, I wasn't having like the time of my life at SMU. Like, it's a very, if you want to like go out and party, you have to spend like minimum $80 when you want to go out in Dallas. Like, it's ridiculous. So it just like wasn't that fun of a lifestyle for me, but I loved Dallas. So when I graduated SMU, I wasn't really looking to leave. Like, I had that opportunity with the Cowboys. I felt like if I stayed long enough, like something would come open and work itself out, like in that market.
Okay.
Turns out, you know, things don't always, you know, work out when you need them to work out. I couldn't just not be making money. So I applied to Active, which is a, I guess it's hard, it's a software company, but they have a website that covers running and fitness and nutrition and all kinds of stuff. So I was like, well, you know, I'm into sports and activity and stuff, so, and I'm a writer, so it's not going to be that tough. It was a totally fine job. I enjoyed it. I did get into running. I did many, many 5Ks. I did do a half marathon. It was a fun time in my life. But I was always itching to get back into sports, and I was always doing the SMU stuff on the side. So eventually I just had to get out of there.
Nikki, before we tie a bow on this SMU conversation, did you experience Milo Butterfingers when you were down there? That's one of my favorite bars, not just in Dallas, but all over. Did you do that? Did you go to High Fives as well?
High Fives, I don't think so. I did go to Milo's. Great, dark, dingy little place.
Grungy, yeah.
Yeah, I lived at the apartment complex one summer right across the street.
Okay. I found a fly in my beer one time, and I said, this is my place. And from then on out, even though that turns off a lot of people, it was weird to see a lot of SMU students go there because that didn't seem like their style. But who knows? Who knows? I guess it just how it shakes out. So let's move on to the rivals portion of this. You kind of mentioned you want to stay in Dallas, working a job. You start working at SMU Rivals, covering the team. What led to them eventually making you the publisher of the site?
So I started interning for them it was my second year at SMU. I believe, like, June Jones had been fired and everything. So I start covering them as an intern, and it's mostly recruiting, reporting. I get kids' numbers from Adam, who's a senior. He's the publisher at the time. Like, that's how these smaller rival sites work. Like, they find someone who's plugged in, and at SMU there aren't that many people that are. So Adam was a senior, and he ran the site. I mostly just did like a lot of recruiting updates. It's hard to get a lot of kids to respond when you hardly have any Twitter followers and stuff. So it was a grind sometimes, but they answered me more than they answered Adam. So he liked having me. And eventually Adam got a job with the Dallas Morning News. So, being that I was, they're doing pretty much the exact same job, I just stepped right in as publisher, and I had an intern and stuff, and I was able to keep that on, even while I was working at Active. Like, at SMU, it's great experience because if you're not asking questions, like, the room is silent. You have to start, like, stepping up and asking questions and reporting. I know a lot of people thought, like, me and Chad had a contentious relationship when we were at SMU, and it's because, like, I was one of the only people asking questions there,
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Nikki Chavanel at Season 1, Episode 7 of Trusting the Process. Nikki, bring up Chad Morris. That's where I was going to go next. What was your initial impression, and then what was your relationship like with him at SMU? You brought up the fact that you were one of the few reporters covering the team. I'm sure it's a lot different from Arkansas share your perspective to our listeners on what that was like.
Yeah, so, well, okay, so SMU, in the first year that he was there, they were still absolutely terrible. And as a student, while I was covering the team, it is tough to report, I don't know, I guess, like the straight edge, unbiased type stuff. So I guess I was more vocal when things were going badly. And as one of the few people that pays attention to what's going on with SMU football, you know, there's sometimes backlash about the stuff that you put out or that you tweet and stuff. So it's not always good, but like we ended up having a good working relationship, I would say.
Nikki, I've made the comparison several times that Chad just wasn't ready for the amount of attention that he received at Arkansas. When you think about him as the coach at SMU, that's what, the most 10th, 15th paid sports program in the Dallas-Fort Worth area? I mean, there are some high schools that receive more coverage. Am I correct in insinuating that Chad Morris wasn't ready for Arkansas, not just from a coaching standpoint, but just the amount of attention he's paid by Razorback fans relative to the SMU fans in the Dallas-Fort Worth area?
Oh, I mean, this market is so saturated. Like, there's so many people cover this team for how many people there are, like, in mm-hmm. the state. I know that the fan base is very large, so it's necessary, but no, there is no way that, like, he could have been prepared for the tough questions that he was going to get, especially, you know, later on in his tenure here. I think that there's a good thing in that, because he was more open with us in terms of practice. I think that a lot of coaches, as they get seasons, they turn against the media more and they're more distrusting of them.
Yeah.
But I don't think that, when the pressure's already that high, it just doesn't help, obviously, to have that much more attention.
Let's talk about your move. So in April of 2018, you announce to the college football world, the Arkansas fan base, that you're coming to covering the Hogs. What led to the move, and were you a little apprehensive of moving from Dallas to Fayetteville?
Well, I wasn't apprehensive at all, because I had quit my job at Active like 3 months prior. And I had been like looking around and stuff, and I was going to go work for like the Frisco Rough Riders and work in like game day production. So I was like going to be stepping away from like writing. And so when I got a call from Rivals that they were going to be, having a different direction with the site, I was just like, yes. I came up to visit like the next day just to make sure, because I had never, ever been to Arkansas. I was like, I need to make sure this is someplace I could see myself living. And I was like walking around campus, I called Rivals. I was like, yes.
I can just imagine Nikki like an Arkansas recruit. You hear things about Arkansas, nothing but cow pastures and hay fields. Just her either coming in on X&A or coming in her car and just nervous as heck. And then she actually gets into Fayetteville, gets on the campus, gets in to Dixon, Town Square, whatever. It's like, oh, this is actually kind of cool. How surprised were you about Northwest? And I know it's grown since you've been here. It seems like it's growing extremely every single day. What were your initial thoughts on what you were walking into at Arkansas, and what were you taking away when you actually came to campus and experienced Fayetteville for the first time?
I mean, I just had like no preconceived notions about what Arkansas was like. I didn't like watch a lot of SEC football before I moved up here. So I didn't even hear the Hog call really before I moved up here. I just had a blank slate. And I was surprised that, like, all of this was up here. I was like, man, this is beautiful. I can't believe I hadn't really heard of this before, but I wasn't like much of an adventurer or anything, so I don't know why I really would have. I was mostly a city girl, and so that was a worry for me. I am used to having everything around, you know, at your fingertips if you're willing to drive, you know, 30 minutes or more. You don't have that here, but there's, you know, a lot of convenience to living in Arkansas. I have loved it, and I have moved even farther outside of civilization since I got here. So you just get used to it, I think.
Nikki, you mentioned taking over at Rivals, and what I find about your relationship with the company interesting is the guy you took over for, the guys really, being Trey Biddy and Danny West, you had worked with Danny within recruiting and stuff. What was y'all's relationship like when you were at SMU and he was doing the Rivals at Arkansas? And what's that like today since technically y'all are still competitors?
Yeah, well, so I had remembered meeting Danny and stuff at camps, but at Rivals, the big sites, like, they don't really mess with, you know, the smaller sites. Like, we're kind of just, you know, extraneous material over here. So, I mean, I remember, like, exchanging recruits numbers and stuff, but we've become much better friends since I actually moved here and got to know him. So, no, there actually wasn't much of, like, a, oh, now he's a competitor, I have to stop talking to him, because we didn't have much of a relationship before. But it's always been very cool. But it was very intimidating, obviously, coming in and taking over a product that had been built by someone else over the course of like a decade and more. So very, very intimidating, but it just raises the competition level and it's fun.
Now, what are you going to do?
You're listening to Trusting the Process.
You're coming in out of state, and I can remember the backlash initially, and you hadn't even done anything. It'd be one thing if you had a prior, like, tumultuous background, but you're coming in and you're trying to make a good impression on the fan, and some people don't even give you a chance. You and Hutch get teamed up. How hard was that first week, month, year initially, just on you personally and just the brand itself at Hogbeat.com?
I mean, it was tough. Like, it's hard to sell your credentials to a lot of people who are used to one certain thing, and especially at Rivals, it's a subscription service. Like, a lot of people, they pay for the people that are there.
Yeah.
And so I just had to get to work and just start showing people that, you know, covering recruiting, it's just work. Like, you just have to call a lot of people and do as good as you can to communicate, like, how things are going to people. I like to keep my takes as reasonable as possible. That's something I pride myself on. I never like to, you know, hype up expectations about stuff, but I just have to, you know, get honest with them, be like, you might not like this at first, but, you know, no one likes change. Just see if you like it. And then I brought in Hutch, who was just, I could not have done it without him, because I'm over here making flashcards of players, and Hutch is like an entire encyclopedia worth of Razorback knowledge. So without him, it would be impossible.
Nikki, I know that you didn't get much of a honeymoon period when it comes to the Arkansas fan base. And I had forgotten about this story until I was reminded on social media yesterday. And I know it's not just Arkansas fans. Fans just used to be rabid in general. So you move in April. Next thing you know, Arkansas baseball's in the College World Series. And you had a particular tweet, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it's something after the drop foul ball in Game 2, didn't you say something to the extent of, at least Drake drops his new album at midnight? Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So
I am.
you hadn't been fully acclimated to the heartbreak in Arkansas sports. It's not just that. It's the Reggie Fish muff punt, 98, the Sterner fumble. There's other, and I'm not trying to initially like pinpoint those guys out because then there's been other stuff in Arkansas history. That was something that I'm sure was an initial shock to you, how rabid fans got at you for that. What do you remember about that night, that week, and just how quickly you were thrown to the wolves by Arkansas Razorback fans?
Well, I can tell you I don't joke as much on Twitter as I used to. I think it comes with, like, the more followers that you have, right? Because at first, like, oh, you make a bad joke, not that many people notice. And then once you have more, it gets blown up. And so a bad joke or a joke that people can't, like, pick up on your tone or whatever.
Yeah.
It just can really run wild. And I remember I had people, like, after I had tweeted, people texting me, like, I don't think that's going to go how you think it is. And I was just like, what? It was like, no big deal. And I was like, oh, man. Wow. Okay. I see now. I do pride myself on being, like, unbiased. So I'm never going to say I'm a fan. I'll always admit, yes, it's better when the Hogs win. I think we all know that.
Yeah. Subscriptions, but, money, readers.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a business. So I'm never going to be against that. But, like, I do to this day say that I'm never rooting for Arkansas. And I know that a lot of people still can't understand that. But I want to be able to say with a straight face that, like, I'm going to cover the program, whether it's bad news or good news.
So that was probably an embarrassing time for you. I don't know. Maybe you don't think of that as embarrassing or not. It just depends on where you go. The most embarrassing moment I've had in this industry is the whole Madison Pruitt catfish thing. Nikki, would you say that's, I don't know, I don't even know if I could call it a blemish. Do you have a more embarrassing story that you'd like to share when it comes to just covering sports media itself? Is there something that stands out outside of that?
I'm trying to think, and I don't think so. I think that was the thing that I've said that has set people off, like, to a crazy level. I think yeah. Since then I've been pretty mild in my takes.
Nikki, one of the advantages that you have over guys like Otis, Dudley, Danny, and Richard, and is that the four other recruiting guys? Is that right?
I think that's it.
Okay. And I want to say this first. Love all those guys. Done it with Danny. Done it with Richard. Those are my friends. There's only one person in Arkansas sports media that I don't like, and we don't have time for him today. You have the advantage of being younger, being around my age, and social media is huge for your brand. You have an appealing aspect of the way you can use it. How crucial has that been for you guys at Rivals and you and Hutch working together?
I mean, I think it's been really big in terms of, you know, growing our audience. I don't know if it necessarily translates into subscriptions. I still think Arkansas as a team has a little bit of a way to go to, like, enticing people to buying something that is, you know, $100+. Like, some people have a hard time, like, reasoning, because there are a lot of, like, free outlets these days. But what Hutch and I try to do through our social media is show what we provide to people, like, on a daily basis on the message board. And that's just, like, constantly being present, constantly, like, if there's a question, like, we're not just going to guess or whatever. We're going to actually go and hunt down whoever we need to hunt down to try to find the right answer and stuff. But, you know, I think that with recruiting, for sure, I can get a kid's number and have an interview down very quickly, I think, because of the following.
Nikki, we're always improving in this industry and life itself. I've got to learn more baseball. I had the luxury of doing a show with the voice of Razorback Baseball and Mr. Phil Elson. So I almost kind of let him be and just would ask him a question or two. I need to get more experience in that area, and I'm open about that. What's the biggest thing you think you need to improve on?
Well, you know, I think I can always grow my knowledge of, you know, basketball and football. As someone who hasn't played either sport, I think there's always room to grow, and that's the reason why I love listening to guys like Eric Musselman, who do go out of their way to explain certain things. And you just feel like you're learning when you're talking to them, not just hearing a quote that you could have come up with yourself, you know. And then I think there's a challenge, especially in a year like this, where you're just needing to constantly push yourself harder. I do like set a lot of our editorial plan at Hogvie, and mm-hmm. on some days it can be hard to motivate yourself to like go beyond what's expected.
You bring up the editorial side of things. We're also learning. We're learning what works, trial and error. This past year politically has been toxic, and I'm not asking you to share your political beliefs because I don't really care. And I don't think our what I've learned about this industry is I don't care if you lean left. I don't care if you lean right. I just want you to listen to the show. Now, you got a little lax on people sharing their political opinions during this past election cycle. I wonder if you could go back to that moment when you decide, would you undo that? Would you not allow people to speak on politics in the message board? Because I think it's back to that now. But just from that perspective, what are your thoughts on that?
It's tough because there was a long period of time where there just wasn't much sports-wise to discuss. And like Hogvie has always been like a smorgasbord of topics being discussed.
Mm-hmm.
But there's just an ugliness that has been, especially in an election year, that comes out when politics are discussed.
With COVID.
Yeah, it's impossible not to damage the community and just the vibe of the board. And that the vibes, I'm all about the vibe. You got to have an environment people want to come to. And so while political discussion can be addicting and fun at times, it's just not the vibe, you know?
Yeah. Nikki, my aunt has a rule that we can't discuss politics of any way, shape, or form at the table. And while we have had arguments in the past, I'm not going to say that we haven't, they haven't been as grave as some of the political discussions I've had. You mentioned kind of vibes with this Arkansas fan base and your readers. I wonder, and I've been kind of waiting on this till the end. So you work in a male-dominated industry. And initially when you get here, there's probably some people that unsubscribe to Hogbeat based on you just being a girl, which is just completely unfair. And I know you bust your butt. I know you work your tail off in this industry. And I've really enjoyed reading your stuff, talking with you, becoming friends. Do you feel like certain Razorback fans were hesitant about you at first just because you're a woman?
I think that's fair to say. I don't know what percentage of it is, but I think it's natural. And it also has to do with my age. I'm also not incredibly experienced.
Yeah.
Did I feel like I 100% had the capability to do the job? Yes, but I do think it's something that does need to be proven sometimes.
Let's talk about that age part for a sec, because I struggle with that sometimes, and I joke about it as the youngest sports radio host in the state of Arkansas, and I use that as just a joke. For people that know me, I'm very sarcastic, self-deprecating. I like to have fun, not just on the Morning Rush, but on social media. Has age been a deterrent for some people believing you or thinking you're good? Because I've found some people, some Morning Rush listeners think, oh, he doesn't know that because he's 26. Well, age doesn't, talent is talent, right? Does that get annoying when people don't agree with you just because of your age? Because it does, it wears on me sometimes.
It does, but it doesn't come up like too often.
Good.
At least not with recruiting, which is what I do for the most part. And I do wish I had more knowledge, but I mean, I can't create what I don't have. So all I can provide is my unique perspective. So that's what I'm going to do.
Nikki, I've talked to some friends about another part of this in the industry, not guys, but more girls, because this is a more girl-centric thing. You probably got some volatile DMs. You get catcalled at games. There's just some stuff that I don't have to go through that you do, unfortunately. And I'm sorry about that. I don't do that. I know that doesn't make it any easier. But we mentioned the age, mentioned that. Does that get annoying? Are there just times you just want to cuss out fans or cuss out guys that send you stuff that they have no business sending?
You know, I think I have done a good job on my social media of showing that I will call stuff out, because I don't get stuff like that very much. I think when people realize that they might get exposed, that they just don't do that very much. So I think that's a positive in the culture.
Screenshots are valuable, aren't they?
Yes, absolutely. When it's in public, I mean, I haven't been in public for a while, so I kind of forget what it feels like. But I guess you just kind of shrug that stuff off.
Have people actually come up to you and like said stuff like that? Or
No.
Is it just more like games and stuff you hear from the stands or something on social media?
Yeah, it's mostly, you know, if you just listen at games and stuff and you have like eyes on you and it feels uncomfortable, but you know, you just look like you belong there.
Yeah, it's confidence. The confidence is the key. As someone that I value a lot I don't know how often when you go somewhere publicly you get recognized by college students, Arkansas fans or whatever, but I try to be as friendly, as kind as possible. What have your conversations, Nikki, when you have met Razorback fans? I'm not talking about the perverted ones that we're just discussing, but just the interactions that you've had in person. What have those been like?
People are great. It always surprises me. Like, I know I have a decent following, but it still surprises me every time, and I am a little self-conscious of it. Like one time my pharmacist knew who I was, and I'm like, oh, now this is weird because you're my pharmacist. But at the same time, like, you know, it's just the community. You just accept it.
Don't take free Demerol, young lady. Don't be doing that. Nikki, you bring up, so you brought up your pharmacist. Like, for example, Bruce in Fort Smith's the guy that delivers our mail, and we've had conversations before. Great guy. It's funny sometimes, but it can be, I don't know if intrusive's the right word, but some people like think they know more about you. How do you balance that? How do you balance your personal life and your private life from your public life? And people do it a variety of ways. How does Nikki Chabanel do that?
Well, I guess I just don't let things bother me. Like, I have no problem with like people knowing where I'm at, not specifically where I live, but like I'm generally a trusting person, so I'm pretty cool with it. But like with my social media, I don't feel like I overshare.
Mm-hmm.
I just kind of, I don't know, like Ben, my boyfriend, like he doesn't really like being on my social media. So I just very rarely post him, but like people on the message board know who he is. I don't think that's a bad thing. I think it's good sometimes that people remember that we are just normal humans trying to go about life.
Nikki, has Ben a subscriber or nah?
I've been several, yes.
Okay, I gotcha.
You have to sometimes.
Nikki, we got a few more questions before we finish up shop, and it's been great conversation with Nikki Chabanel on Season 1, Episode 7 of Trusting the Process. What is your end goal in this industry? I know that you've listed on your resume that you'd like to write for a professional sports team one day. Has that changed, or is that still where you want to end up?
Well, it's funny because now that I am so attached to a singular person like Ben, it's hard to imagine like the next step that doesn't involve him. So you kind of adjust accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
But if I was to leave Arkansas, it would absolutely be for like an NFL team, I think. So that is really the only other big goal that I have that I've always had. Really, I think that covering a professional team, just there's so much more freedom involved with the storytelling, and you know, just overall. I enjoy the professional aspect of the sport.
Would he be the hardest reason to leave Northwest Arkansas?
Oh, well, I mean, he'd be coming with me for sure.
Okay. But, Nikki, on that note, and this is me being a bad friend just not knowing this, y'all aren't engaged, are you? Am I?
No, we're not. Okay. We're not. We live together.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure.
We don't really talk about legality, you know?
Okay. I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't completely missing something on this conversation.
No, you're good.
Okay. All right, Nikki, we'll have some fun with this last part. I remember when we initially talked about you becoming a frequent guest on Halftime, you were kind to do it. It's been a big part of the show to this day, the recruiting news that you provide our ESPN Arkansas listeners. And I remember seeing a quote on your timeline. Yeah, well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man. And I had, and this is just me being pop culture ignorant, I had no idea what that movie was from. The Big Lebowski. Is that your favorite?
Oh, no.
Is that your favorite movie?
It's not my favorite movie. It is a great movie. Ocean's 11 is actually my favorite movie, but that quote is just like, it's just kind of how I try to handle differences of opinion. Like, I'm just not going to take anything too seriously. Like, if I write something you don't agree with, well, you know,
too bad.
That's just your opinion. And especially with recruiting, you know, with how ratings and rankings work, and everything is so subjective. Like, you have to remember, like, it's just one man's opinion at the end of the day.
Is Jeff Bridges your celebrity crush, or is it someone else? And I want to hear a guy celebrity crush and your girl celebrity crush. And I'll tell you mine before we do this. Mine would be Lily Collins, girl. Guy-wise, probably Chase Crawford would be my guy.
Chase Crawford is a great choice. man. Oh, there's so many attractive men out there right now.
Don't hurt Ben's feelings. Don't get excited about this. You can say Ben if you want to.
I'll go with Chris Hemsworth and Margot Robbie.
Okay. Those are two good ones.
How's that?
Now, I always forget. I'm mixing it. Chris played Thor. Liam played Miley and was Miley's boyfriend, right?
They're both great, okay. But I prefer Chris.
Okay. Just wanted to share. And Margot mm-hmm. Robbie, that's one of my best friend's celebrity crush times 1,000. So I think you're right.
Times 1,000. Wow. Yeah. Mine's times 1,000,000.
Nikki, this has been a lot of fun. Nikki Chavanel, she covers Arkansas and recruiting for Hogbeating Rivals. You can follow her on Twitter at Nikki Chavanel. You can hear her on the Hogbeat Hour Thursdays at 7 o'clock here on ESPN Arkansas and hitthatline.com. And then you can also hear her halftime on Tuesday, 12. Now, I know we shifted the times. It's 12:30, right? Or is it 11:30?
11:30.
That's just me trying to, my brain's getting jumbled here for a sec. Nikki, we appreciate the time, and thanks for sharing a glimpse into your life with a bunch of our listeners.
No problem. Thanks, Ty.
Make sure you're subscribed to the Hit That Line Podcast Network, brought to you by the Breeden RV Center. Thanks for listening, and whatever work field you're in, remember to always be trusting the process.
Long range! Oh, are you kidding me?
He's got his J back, folks, and the eye of the tiger.